Pushkin. Hi, I'm Phil Donahue.
And I'm Marlo Thomas. And we're going on a series of double dates to find out
what makes a marriage last. You only have to be around Sting and Trudy Styler for a minute to feel the electricity between them.
Their building is gorgeous modern with lots of curves. In fact, Sting says he was attracted to it because it's so female. No sharp corners.
When we first walked into their home, there was Sting, tucked into the sofa with his head in a book.
He told us the boss would be here in a moment, and right on cue, Trudy breezed into the room. She invited us to sit at a long wooden table where every chair was a different color. I chose the red one, and Phil chose the green.
I could immediately see the connection, the little touches between them. They even finished each other's sentences.
Interestingly, when they first met in 1982, they were both with other people. And that's where our conversation began.
We were neighbors.
We're both British.
Mm-hmm. We're from the north of England. And we found ourselves in London living with other people, but neighbors. You know when you meet somebody and you recognize them? I mean, that might be wisdom in hindsight, but I recognize Trudy as someone that I could spend the rest of my life with. Then I saw it clearly. I just knew who she was instantly.
Well, that must have been kind of hard if you were neighbors.
It was very difficult at first because we were not supposed to be together. So we fought that off for a couple of years, that instinct.
And did you two know right away, or?
It's like a recognition of somebody that you feel you know, but you actually don't really know. But there's something that is drawing you to closer to someone. And of course, it was the least ideal situation that you can imagine.
Neither Sting nor Trudy were prepared for the feelings the situation would unleash.
That, and then when it happens to you, it's like a storm coming at you.
A tidal wave.
And when we began being a couple and moved in with each other, it was not without its challenges.
And the media interest was very...
And the media interest was, yeah.
How did you know to trust each other? How did that come about?
I think there was a chapter in our history when that was us against the world. You know, we were in a foxhole. And you basically have to trust that person because you're surrounded by danger. Mm-hmm. So I think that was very formative. Mm-hmm. And I was a mess. You know, she protected me.
When I hear questions about, you know, oh, you're madly in love and passionate and all of that is, yes, it's true. But I think that friendship, too, you know, needs to be part of a discussion about the longevity of a marriage or a relationship. Otherwise, within these circumstances that us coming together, we couldn't have lasted.
And you brought up the thing about the passion, of course, all over, everywhere. We read about the tantra sex, is that what it's called? You know, we interviewed President Carter and his wife, and they talked about reading the Bible every night. And I said, wouldn't it be more interesting if Sting and Trudy read the Bible every night and President Carter and his wife had wild sex? That'd make a better book.
How do you know they don't?
Well, we don't have this kind of sex all the time.
No.
What kind of sex is that? How would you describe it?
I mean, we have a pretty intense sexual charge between us still. But as Trudy said, that's kind of ephemeral. What's important is that I really like this woman, and she really likes me, despite knowing me. And that's so important. I mean, the sexual thing can cool off. It doesn't have to be supercharged the whole time.
Right.
But the affection for another person, when she walks into the room, she lights my room up. And it's got nothing to do with sex. actually. It's all to do with liking the way that person presents herself in the world, liking the decisions she makes, the comments she makes, the observations she makes, and respecting them, and really enjoying her company. I enjoy her company.
What do you?
We do like a good hotel room, though, right?
How did you keep a sexy life going with kids in the house?
I would be catching up with Sting on, you know, on various tours. This is a man who's, you know, I'm married to a gypsy who, you know, his life has been
itinerant.
Itinerant. I like that word. So I like troubadour.
Peripatetic.
Tell us the basis of the tantra sex.
I think it's called tantric sex.
Tantric, okay.
Okay, we've studied yoga for over 30 years now. Yoga comes from the same root as the word yoke. And what yoga does, it yokes your movement in the world with your consciousness of it. So you can be sitting down and doing yoga. You can be standing up and doing yoga. You can eat and do yoga. You're connecting it to something greater than yourself, to a spiritual life. You can have sex and do yoga. You know, sex is a sacred act. You can make children. You know this? You make children that way. So it's not just a stretch for me, because this is a sacrament that we share to celebrate. Uh-huh. Existing. Uh-huh. Being alive, being together. Uh-huh. And it's got nothing to do with how long you make love for. That's just silly talk. It's actually about being conscious about what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. You know, the sort of the tabloid version is, oh, we have sex for, you know, 5 or 6 hours. And what Sting is saying is, it's about really like being connected to that person, to take time, you know, and I don't know what the time could be, but it's during that time that you're together, you're together, very connected to each other, you know, kissing for a long time, like preparing a meal together, eating together, just like that you feel that you're at one with that, with your love, with your beloved.
It's the opposite of wham, bam, thank you, man. It's,
yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
I've never been a wham, bam, thank you.
Yeah.
Oh, that's, occasionally.
That's a wonderful explanation of it.
Well, I say to Sting, I love you in the in-between moments of life. The other day, we'd had some sort of upsetting news about a friend who has got a health crisis, and I could see how sad you looked, and we were just right here, and I took your face in my hands and looked in your eyes, and I just held you. And I could see that you actually, amidst the sadness, that you felt fear. And I acknowledged that with, you know, that we've had so many years together that are now behind us. And so we also become aware when we get to the age that we are that it is going to end. But for me, in that moment, the in-between moment of holding Sting's face in my hands and looking in his eyes, it's like, please let us be well and have these moments forever, kind of.
How about interpersonal conflict? Certainly, you know, this is not a Disney movie. Does one of you pout? Does one of you shut up?
We don't actually fight very much.
No, I tried fighting with Sting because I used to be a very volatile person. And he's taught me to be a less volatile person. And I'll tell you why. Because he does not deal with people yelling very well at him. And he has a very simple way to... it's probably in your psyche very complex. But when I, 30-something years ago, did my Trudy yelling at you for... I don't know, whatever was upsetting me, the veil just comes down and you just, like, look at me. And I remember I'd started to yell and I'd said, we can never yell in front of our children. I really set out a rule. And he was not a yeller anyway, so I said, come outside. We were living at Lake House and we went up to for a little walk, and I was like shouting and yelling, and then you climbed over a fence and there was a field of sheep there, and I carried on with my like, and you're this, and you absolutely bloody
you.
This, and you and I looked around and these sheep were all going and then I looked at your face and you were going like so I was thinking, what a waste of my energy.
We'll have more after a quick break. We're back to our interview with Sting and Trudy Styler. When we left off, they were recounting an argument they had. Trudy was shouting in a field of sheep, while Sting calmly looked on in silence.
So I thought I'd better like switch out my strategy of trying to resolve conflict. How can we do this better? Not accusing.
That's hard to do.
Yeah,
but I mean, when you get mad, it's hard to say, okay, let's have a nice talk where I don't accuse you of anything and you don't accuse me of anything.
I mean, my family were very volatile. My parents were always fighting. So I never wanted that in my life. That was just toxic for me.
So you were instructed to behave in an opposite way.
Yeah. I think I was educated by watching my parents, who were very young. My mother was 18 when she had me. My father was 20 or something. I saw how they reacted with each other in front of us. And that's the last thing I wanted, I think. And I don't lose my temper.
No.
I actually don't.
What a blessing. How about your parents?
I think my dad was just a very shut down person, spoke monosyllabically, literally. Sting, when he met Harry, would say, you know, my father would go, "You're up then." Sting would say, "Yes, Harry, I'm up." And then someone would leave the room and he'd say, "You're off then." So, "Yes, Harry, we're off now." He had this thing about never speak until you're spoken to, and that led for quite a lonely life, and a very lonely life for my ma, who was just very vivacious and very outgoing and very kind of like assertive. And I always felt that she envied wives with more gregarious husbands.
I noticed Sting touches you a lot.
He might be cueing me to shut up.
No, that's a very natural thing.
It's a sign of affection.
I think that, you know, when he touches me like that, I consider that, you know, for somebody who's, you know, in my 60s, that when my husband says I look beautiful and or he admires the dress I'm wearing, I start to walk on air again, like I did when I was 30.
However, if I don't like what she's wearing, I say it.
I know, so does my husband.
And I say, look, if you want to believe me when I don't like it, then it's the same. When I say I like it, I'm telling the truth. So you make a choice.
We can trust that.
I know, it still hurts your feelings, I know. Though, doesn't it?
Sometimes he tells me on the way down in the elevator, I go, it's too late. Because I make the stupid mistake of saying, "Do you like this?" And he'll say, "You have better things than that." I go, "Do you feel that if you drift away from each other because you've been traveling a lot or you have your own issues while you're making a movie and you're really busy and you've got 1,000 fires to let out and you as well, when that happens, it's like, how do you reset?"
I think you have to raise a flag and say, "Look, I'm feeling that we need to just sit down." Mm-hmm. And not even talk, just sit down. Because our lives are so busy. And I don't like the cell phone. She's on the cell phone a lot. I don't like it. I feel that's invasive. I mean, I will make a call on mine and then I'll turn it off.
Yeah.
This is my habit.
That's a problem for me, because when Sting's on the road, he makes the call to me every day. And if I miss it and I try to call him back, his phone is off. So it's like, I can speak to you on your terms, but you can call me anytime you want.
Actually, that's not true. You're not easy to get either.
The big accommodation is absolutely no phones when we eat.
It's a ritual.
It's a ritual. And then when you sit down, the coming together over food and wine is, it's a sacrament. It's like we're all together now. But I can see that my life as a producer involves this constant communication and putting out fires of, you know, all the things that go wrong on sets with films and television stuff. And it's a constant, because as a producer, you're like mom. It's like, mom, something else has gone wrong. And
right. Can you say what you think is the strength of your marriage and what is the weakness of your marriage that you have to work on?
I mean, it's not something that is kind of settled like a treaty. We're constantly negotiating and constantly navigating each other.
But a rock star, to fall in love with a rock star.
Big mistake.
Is a very dangerous thing to happen, isn't it?
Where are you going with this, Bill?
He's the talk show guy. I'm the romantic one.
It's a stereotype. It's only partially true.
How do you know, though? How do you know?
You know, it used to be really difficult with just feeling so jealous all the time.
That's right.
Yeah, it was that. And I am a very jealous person, so I've had to...
You're literally saying so. Yes.
Yeah, so I've had to sort of, like, look at where does my jealousy come from? And growing up, you know, as one of three girls, being jealous about getting attention was like something that we had in our household.
Where were you in the order?
Middle. Yeah.
Did you do that with Steve?
So, not to begin with, because I was sort of like trying to, you know, really swallow my pride about, well, I'm pretty too, and I'm the girlfriend now, and to assert myself as getting through this sort of like rage of young women saying to me, like, do you know how lucky you are? And I sort of like want to go,
how young?
Like, he's the fucking lucky one, you know? Which I think I did say a few times.
I'm sure you must have.
And now, you know, it's sort of like it goes away. It sort of like lessens.
I felt that when I first met Phil. Every woman in America wanted to be married to him. In fact, when we got married, I got letters saying, how could you marry him? You know, a woman one wrote me and said, every morning at 9 o'clock, when my husband and children leave the house, I put on my lipstick and turn on Phil's show. I mean, they actually had a fantasy about him. So it certainly isn't the same as with a rock star, because that's so sexual and so...
I don't know.
So did you tell Sting? Did you say, look, I'm having trouble with this, or don't...
Well, he walks very fast, and I used to, like, wear enormous high heels and Azzedine Alaia dresses and, like, be really kind of, like, dressed to the nines when we were in public. And, I it would take a lot of effort to look so great. And Sting, to navigate hordes of people, he would be walking, like, in front of me to get away from all the crowds, thinking that I would be all right. And I would sort of feel like, hey, look, I'm wearing, like, 6-inch heels. I can't keep up with you, and I wouldn't keep up with you even if I was wearing sneakers, because I saw that he was navigating. That public persona thing really bothered me. But then, you know, we talked about, you know, jealousy issues and me coming to terms with his public persona and his private persona had really nothing to do with each other.
No, I've been there too.
Yeah.
And I think it's, jealousy is in everybody's heart. Everybody, you get territorial. This is my guy.
Yeah.
Don't touch him.
And I know the girls I know the women.
He knows the trigger.
I know all of the ones, as soon as I come into a room, I go, like, I can kind of pick them out. Oh, yeah, this one, he'll like that one.
Because you know he'll flirt with those.
I know his taste in, yeah. He's such a gentleman and very enigmatic with the way that he does it. But, of course, I know him so well. I know his body language so well. I know those eyes, how they... You know, they seemingly, you know, are quite
still. She knows
still.
When I'm fancy somebody on the cinema screen.
Oh, the TV.
I do. I lean over and I say, the third one on the right? Yeah. And he goes, yeah.
Well, I love that you walk into a room and can spot the ones.
Yeah.
That's so fascinating to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can you do that too? Can you tell?
Yeah. He knows my tastes as well.
Usually older men. I'm the youngest man he's ever been
with.
It's
true.
You lived together for how long before you got married?
10 years.
You lived together for 10 years. Mm.
We had 3 children in the 10 years that we lived together.
That's amazing.
So I assume you recommend that.
Living together?
Yeah.
No, I don't really. I think that I had no idea when we got married. First of all, we got married because our kids had started to be a bit bullied at school because we moved from urban, splendor, London, you know, everybody living together and not particularly being married, and that was okay. But moving into the countryside in England is a very different thing. And not being married and having 3 kids going to school, it became an issue for the kids.
Why didn't you marry?
Why didn't we marry? I think it was because...
It was going so well. Why change it?
I think that what I remember you saying is the biggest failure that you ever felt was that you failed in a marriage. You failed your marriage. And that you never wanted to fail again. And that, I respected that. So I think I was okay with it for a few years. And then one of the kids came back from school and said, somebody said I'm a bastard, is it true?
Aww.
And I said, no, that's your dad.
Well, when you got married after living together and had these babies and all, once you got married, did that change anything? Did it make it different now that you had signed this covenant?
It actually, people gave Trudy much more respect and deference than they did before. And then I was proud to say, this is my wife.
Yeah, I remember the first invitation that came to us after we were married. It had always been, even in the 10 years that we were together, these, you know, things that you're invited to, sting and guest. It would really smash my feelings, you know, and I would often decline or have somebody call and say that Sting and Trudy would be delighted to accept and whatever. But when I remember the first invitation that came, Mr. and Mrs. Sumner, and I was like, oh, and then, you know, I didn't have to try so bloody hard after that.
So what do you think makes a marriage last?
Luck.
I don't discount that word, that it's, when you say luck, you mean it's a fortunate thing. But I think that when we look at someone's chemistry with each other, and there's an instant, like, I know I like you. In our case, we laughed at the same things and we noticed that we laughed at the same things. We're similar ages, we're from similar backgrounds, our terms of reference are like...
Nostalgias are the same.
Yeah, nostalgias are the same. Our brand of humour is the same. And I remember there's a wonderful quote from Jean-Paul Sartre's wife. She said, why share a room when you can share the world? And we do share the world. And she was right. It's like I feel him almost, you know, in his absences where he is. And sometimes my intuition tells me, I don't think Sting's very well today. And I'll call and, you know, I can feel, you know, you're in my orbit. Do you feel that?
Yes.
Yeah, you just sort of psychically get connected up.
Especially when we're traveling.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I get great excitement when Sting's been away. You know, I'll pretty myself up for his return and my heart will beat faster. I know he's coming home. He's coming home today. And I'll be as giddy as the young girl, you know.
That's great.
So there you have it. The unbreakable bond between Sting and Trudy Styler. Until next time, I'm Phil Donahue.
And I'm Marlo Thomas.
I think we've tortured you.
It's just the most wonderful thing to talk to the two of
you. It's nice to talk to such an inspiring couple as you two.
Thank you so much. I don't blame you for marrying each other. I would have married either one of you anytime.
Aww.
You're adorable, both of you.
Double Date is a production of Pushkin Industries.
The show was created by us and produced by Sarah Lilly. Michael Bahari is associate producer. Musical adaptations of It Had to Be You by Stellwagen Symphonette.
Marlo and I are executive producers, along with Mia Lobel and Lital Molad from Pushkin.
Special thanks to Jacob Weisberg, Malcolm Gladwell, Heather Fain, John Schnars, Carly Migliori, Eric Sandler, Emily Rostek, Jason Gambrell, Paul Williams, and Bruce Kluger.
If you like our show, please remember to share, rate, and review. Thanks for listening.